speak well when I don't have things written, so bear with me as I read from my prepared presentation, but it's really short. Over the years, I've gained a lot of valuable teaching skills. Some I've learned in textbooks, manuals, and articles. Many I've learned by simple trial and error, and we usually call that hands-on experience. Many more I've learned by listening to my students. Like many teachers, I'm always trying to improve my instruction to better engage students in learning. Classes, conventions, workshops, seminars are usually the place that I turn for new ideas and inspiration. After 15 years, I discovered that my search for more has been exhausting because I've been searching in the wrong direction. I search for ways to fill my teacher head instead of examining my already very full teacher heart. The passion I acquire through feeding my head is fleeting and mostly disappointing. Inspirations from new teaching methods never sustain my passion for teaching. Filling my brain keeps me focused on all I'm not, all I should be doing, and it keeps me searching for the magic bullet in a compartmentalized world of academia. Courage to teach has encouraged me to search for inspiration from within. It's allowed me the time to explore big questions. Why do I choose to teach? How do I honor self in my practice? It's transformed the way I process conflict and stress in my life. It keeps teaching me things about myself, things impossible to discover in an endless search for better lesson plans. When I began bringing myself to my profession, realizing that my teacher heart is an important part of good practice, a shift happened in my life. Compartments merged and faded away. I now experience wholeness I never dreamed possible. Searching within allows me to bring who I am to my work. In the safety of our Courage to Teach circle, I draw inspiration from a community of diverse people with one important thing in common, passion for teaching. Our circle doesn't just feed my head. Poetry, journaling, silence, metaphors, clearness committees, and mindful reflection feeds my soul as well as my head. Our Courage to Teach circle transformed the way I look at my profession, myself, and my world. It has taught me that I'm the magic bullet I've been looking for all along. I'm an integral part of a sacred circle of people who hold each other gently in the palms of our hands. We bear witness to our successes as well as our struggles. We listen as deeply as we think. Together, we truly have discovered the courage to teach. This is the most valuable teaching skill I have ever received. It has improved my relationships with students and colleagues. It has enriched my lesson plan. It's contributed to my happiness in and out of the classroom. It's improved my confidence, my creativity, my energy, and it has restored the honor and pride I feel for my life's work, which is teaching. Thanks for letting me share this with
you. I've been a teacher for more than 30 years. She's been a high school principal, a special ed director, and a district superintendent. She spent nearly 10 years in Washington, D.C. as a national policy fellow with the Institute for Educational Leadership, working on special education policy development with the National Association of State Boards of Education, and she claims that the 10 years in Washington did not ruin her career or her outlook on life. She's a recipient of a National Endowment for the Humanities Fellowship. She was selected 4 years ago as a Fulbright Administrative Scholar, and she taught at the Ankara University Foundation School in Turkey. Selected as a Fulbright Memorial Fund Scholar, and she will be spending 3 weeks in Japan beginning November 12th, which is why we had to hold this event as early as we did the year as we did. And she's currently principal of the Indian Mound Middle School in McFarland. She's proudest, she said, of her son Luke, who is following her passion, a family passion, and is a first grade teacher at Madison Country Day School, where I'm sure he's acquiring the courage to teach. Roberta, we'd like to hear from you now.
Good evening. I grew up a middle child in a family of teachers in a small town in northern Wisconsin. We had no TV, so we ate dinner with Plato and read Millay out loud. Our home buzzed with church study groups, foreign students learning English, and continuing education classes that met in the living room. I witnessed my father and my mother inspiring, performing, prodding, coaching, listening, through breakthroughs and breakdowns. American Heritage and National Geographic were windows on the world larger than our own. To teach, to learn, that was the thing. And to pursue, as Bill Ayers says, the mysterious, ragged, intense, and imperfect profession of teaching, but that was the only thing. My sisters, my brother, and I inherited the passion of my grandparents and my parents, and we all became teachers. And over the past several decades, this vision of education as calling and challenge, alive and elusive, infectious and energizing, has shaped my life. I came to the great space of courage to teach most recently from the world of school administration, but I still remember being drawn to teaching special education, yea, these many years ago, by the conviction that I would make the world a better place. It is the teacher voice in me that has grown stronger and saner in the good company I have kept and in the great space we created together. I came to Courage to Teach 2 years ago, hungry for ways to uplift, to give hope, to move others to action. And in one of the many paradoxes of Courage to Teach, I found these things for myself. The great space of the Courage to Teach community was shaped by our being and our coming together, a magical confluence of 20-some personalities and poetry, of nature and nurture. We came tired on Friday nights, a group strikingly free of complaints and self-pity, but occasionally tinged with burnout, a sense of futility, the fear that all of the hard work, all of the passion, wasn't really making a difference. The great space of Courage to Teach was characterized by a myriad of powerful and beautiful moments and activities. But among them, two were defining for me. One, the hospitality we extended to each other, and the other, the hospitality we extended to ourselves through the gift of poetry. Hospitality. I like best what Joan Chittister says about hospitality, that it is neither a grand gesture nor finishing school activity, but the act of a recklessly generous heart. Many of us arrived with souls that were emotionally starved, and we arrived month after month, year after year, to the reassurance that flawed as we were, flawed as the days or weeks' work might have seemed to us, the friends who greeted us would recognize and would reintroduce us to our very best selves. Yes. The Courage to Teach community's generous hearts were shared and sustained in the silences of morning meditation, in the focus and the gentle intensity of our clearness committees. It was cultivated at meals and at walk and talk, with a munificence of intention that imbued our lives' experience, as common as they were when we brought them, with a new power and a new sense of possibility. What we brought to the group as flaws were recast in the darkness and the light of the season. Self-doubts were lifted by acceptance and turned into grist for change, both personal and professional. We left on Sunday, knowing that we were important to and for one another, that the people for whom we cared were more able to create their daily lives from possibility rather than circumstance. There is a story of a man who spent a whole lifetime studying chimpanzees in the wild, and he concluded that one chimpanzee cannot be a chimpanzee. The same is true for teachers and for all of us here tonight. We need each other, and we need to be needed by each other in order to be who we might be, to be all we yearn to be. And then there's poetry, so connected to my childhood of my librarian mother and my English teacher father, highlighting the beauty and the significance and the ordinariness of the school days, reminding us of the loveliness inherent in the passage of the seasons, as well as the seasons and the peoples of our lives. The poems were for me hospitality for my inner life, balm for a very bruised, but still sort of secretly, recklessly generous heart. There were poems about listening and being listened to. When someone deeply listens to you, it is like holding out a dented cup that you have had since your childhood and watching it fill up with cold, fresh water. There were poems that reminded us that we didn't have to fill every single open space with our own wonderful words and thoughts. What makes a fire burn is the space between the logs, a breathing space. And then there were the poems about the seasons, always the turning of the seasons, and about the moment. 10,000 flowers in spring, the moon in autumn, a cool breeze in summer, snow in winter. If your mind isn't clouded by unnecessary things, this is the best season of your life. Poetry engaged us in the hard work of our weekends together. It allowed us the luxury and the safety of starting from someone else's truth to discover and uncover our own. Together we acknowledged the tapestry of meanings embedded in the poems and the authority of each person to define the significance of it for her or himself. Bit by bit, our personal stories illuminated common and often uncommon connections with the universal and archetypal themes of human experience: fear and loneliness, faithfulness and joy. And we were, every time, honored to be in such company. In the end, it was these two aspects of our great space: the gentle poetic hospitality of poetry from my own heart, and the giving and receiving of that reckless generosity and community that led me back to the principalship. I found in listening deeply to my own inner teacher, a shy spirit actually, encouraged by the unconditional regard of several magnificent clearness committees. But I miss kids. I miss their tender and mysterious confidences. I miss their energy, their laughter, their chaos, and their crises. And I miss my own laughter, the connection to the young, idealistic woman who, like the guest teacher in our lunchroom today said, wanted nothing more than to teach. And so I have returned, through Courage to Teach, to once again become part of a school community. And an extraordinary school community it is. My mother was here. She would say that was spoken like a proud principal. A school community where just a few short months of talking about the power of poetry, of some fledgling conversations about what it means to teach from the heart, about what it is that brings us together and makes us human, what gives us hope. A couple months have revealed a calling to the next Courage to Teach cadre for 5 of our middle school staff. Questions abound in this new, fresh, grace space for us. What would it take for all of the teachers of Indian Mound Middle School to come each morning inspired and invested? How can we value one another and celebrate the diversity of gifts in our community in ways that reflect and generate trust within and among staff, students, and families? What would it look like to be a Courage to Teach school? A school committed to dreaming, to believing, to nurturing the aliveness, and to empowering recklessly generous hearts in every young person and in every staff person. Courage to Teach offered to me a way of mattering to the world again, a way of sustaining and supporting inner courage, the courage, as our colleague Joe said, to reach. A well-worn poem completes the story best for me. It will be, she said, like a river running, now near, now far, now a flash of blue between beaches, now a shrouded shoreline. You see a marina of boats, many colored, and then spaces unbroken by bird cries. You know it, the hope, the daring, the power of it, stronger, deeper, greater than you. A river is not always visible, not from mile upon mile of fog seeing. It can be something sudden, present, ablaze between trees, but more often dull. Dull waters with only a fishing boat drifting. To the end, as your faith still holds you, the river runs. Something greater than you, now near, now far, changing.
Thank you all for coming tonight. It's not lit, but because there are rules about lighting candles. So we brought, anyway, the candle that has served us well for 2 years with Courage to Teach. It's lit at the beginning of every session, and it symbolizes, in a lot of ways, the light within all of us, in the ways that we can draw on that light and expand that light. It's been a huge, huge privilege and honor to work with this group, and you get something of a feel for the kind of dedicated and passionate and warm and intelligent teachers that we worked with by hearing from Roberta and from Colleen. And I feel as if I've been both a gardener and a seedling in this garden, because I've grown tremendously too in this process. What we wanted to do to give you even more of a feel tonight is to, we have a little choir of teacher voices. They're not over to sing together. but we have asked some of the other teachers who are here to stand up and read for you some pieces that they wrote in reflecting on what Courage to Teach has meant to them in their little short 3 or 4 sentence pieces. We put these together originally as a little book that we gave out to all the teachers. It's on the registration table. It's Reflections on Courage to Teach, and you're welcome to have a look at it. But we want to introduce some of the other teachers. We're not going to go through names and introductions, but just ask them to stand and read some of the words that came from their heart as they thought about Courage to Teach. So you know your order, and go ahead.
This community has developed a sense of empowerment and true growth within me in ways the world of timelines, doubt, and past has not offered me. Interestingly, I find now, after being encouraged to teach, both the process and being with these people
my goals via unimportant helps me to focus on what's important at home and at school. Professionally, I have grown in being able to listen more deeply and ask better questions. Not just because I think the question needs to be asked, but recognizing questions that help a person go deeper into a thinking process. It, too, is such a relief to not have to know the answer to the question or to try to fix anyone in a group, but to trust that answers to questions will come from within a person's heart, given time and space. If I have not had the opportunity to be listened to deeply, build collegial relationships in a secure and sacred environment of trust, and had the time to truly explore my inner feelings, I would have left the teaching profession.
Within the current teaching community, my heart is found again. I get back in touch with the center of my teaching. I am given space to reflect, insights to reflect upon, and opportunities to share. It is a community for me that makes it possible to believe again in teaching, to recreate the passion I have for teaching, to nurture and restore the worn-out parts of me that make me the best teacher I can be. Because of the Courage to Teach community, I am still an educator.
Teaching takes courage because to do it well, you really have to put your whole heart and soul into it. And that might sound corny, but if you're not doing it well, it's painful for everyone involved. And when you're doing it well, it's your knowledge, your expertise, and then a little piece of magic that happens between you and your students. I had almost lost that. My fire had almost gone out before Courage to Teach. I'm back in the saddle. I'm doing it again. You can save lives as a teacher. You can take kids who don't know how to learn, don't feel they can learn, and make them believe in themselves. And it's magical, but it's also a huge responsibility. And to keep walking through that door every day does take courage. And thank you to you and to all my Courage to Teach cohorts and to all of you who support us for believing in us and not to let us keep going.
The wisdom of the self, certifiably organic. Inside of me, inside the skin I'm in, inside the cranial folds, between the synapses, lives this thing called wisdom. I'd like to think it's been there since baby days, but it's something that dogs you until you let it in. Wisdom waits for us, steps all over our feet like a faithful pet, and sometimes we trip over it, ignore it, because we are so enamored with what is outside ourselves, our perfection or imperfection as seen by others. And we dwell in the place where wisdom should live, loitering in doorways, blocking the entrance of insight until one day, one moment, we move aside and make a clear passage we let wisdom move. If we're lucky, wisdom will bring its moving van and redecorate the interior and clean up the yard. Wisdom might even have a housewarming and invite its good friends, compassion and insight, and honesty and ethics and integrity and clarity and endurance intact. Surprisingly, those parties aren't as tame as one might imagine. Chaos often shows up to crash, but wisdom is the hostess with the mostest and gets chaos to start the dancing.
And so you have a little bit of a glimpse of why it has been such a treat and an honor to be involved with these gorgeous human beings who every day creatively work with our children to really create the future of our community. So I'd like to read for you what I wrote at the same time when we invited people to reflect on what Courage to Teach meant to them. And this was kind of a remarkable thing. I don't feel as though I write that well, and I've read this about 10 times, and did it in about 20 minutes, and I don't think I could have ever, I think I was writing through my heart on this. And so this is what I wrote. I'm in awe to have had the privilege to work with and honor such a caring, creative, and committed group of educators. Folks who come in bone-weary on Friday night and yet are open to and hungry for nourishing and listening to what's deepest in their heart. The deep respect and openness to experience what I've seen and been part of has been inspirational. I've learned a lot about myself in the process and more fully trust that if I hold the space and invite others to bring themselves to their work, that wisdom will result. I've become devoted to poetry now, to using metaphors, to talking with trees, to asking questions, to welcoming silence together. A deep and profound thank you to this very sweet circle of people. So, it's just, we had such a hard time trying to kind of like, how do we get the essence of this, but this is just a taste of what we have the privilege of experiencing at each of the weekends that we've had through the seasons with this group.
It's just a delight to be here, and you all know how special Barb and Bonnie are. This wouldn't be happening without them. I didn't know they were special enough to have chosen such an auspicious evening for this event. It's the evening of a lunar eclipse. For all of them, probably won't see it tonight, but it will be happening anyway. Kind of like the soul, I guess. It's the evening in which the Red Sox are going to win the World And this means a lot to a kid who grew up in Chicago, rooting haplessly for the Cubs. I was thinking a lot the last few days about a remark that the great sportscaster in Chicago, Jack Brickhouse, made about the Cubs when people were complaining that they had such a long, winless era. He said, hell, anybody can have a bad century. It's true, too. At age 65, you realize that. And it also happens to be this evening almost exactly the 10th anniversary of the very first Courage to Teach group, which I had the privilege of doing, 94 to 96, sponsored by the Fetzer Institute up in Kalamazoo, Michigan, a national foundation, who care a lot about public school educators for reasons that you will understand because of who you are and because of what you heard tonight from some of our teachers and administrators. It can't be said better than they said it. 94 to 96, I worked with 25 K-12 teachers in the state of Michigan. They really helped me write my book, The Courage to Teach. That book would have been a very different one without their wisdom and their practical knowledge. About halfway through that process, the foundation that was sponsoring us realized that they had something good on their hands, and so they asked if I would train half a dozen people to replicate this program in four places around the country. And so over in our living room, 605 Chatham Terrace, near the intersection of Midvale and Tokay, for 2 years we had these training sessions. Half a dozen people who went off to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, Seattle, Washington, back in Kalamazoo, and down in Texas, to replicate the program. And that went wonderfully well. And so about 98, the foundation said, we need to establish a national holding organization for this, the Center for Teacher Formation, which has been up and running since that time out on Bainbridge Island near Seattle, which now has programs in 30 cities around the country, 120 people trained as facilitators, doing both the group work and the financial development work, a skill set which is hard to come by, but people doing it brilliantly well. $2 million of foundation money, and for every foundation dollar, we've been able to raise two additional dollars locally. Because I think there is in this country a deep sense on the part of thoughtful people that we simply are not caring about our public school educators the way we ought to care about them. And I think that this program has tapped into that feeling and has given people an enormously creative way of expressing our deep regard and our high hopefulness for the people doing this very, very important work. As the years have gone by in this last decade, other folks have looked in on this program. Some of the kinds of people who are in this room, physicians and lawyers and corporate CEOs and philanthropists, and they have said, you know, we need this work as much as the educators do. Would it be possible to create circles of trust for folks like us? And so increasingly we are working with other professions around the country, not in competition with our work with public education, which is will always be where our central efforts are, but I think in ways that will complement and support our work in public education, and will increase and spread public understanding of what this work is really all about. And so we now have circles of physicians and attorneys and judges. It's very exciting. I wrote this book, A Hidden Wholeness, The Journey Toward an Undivided Life, because I wanted more people to know about this work, about the inner work, and about the kind of community that you've heard so much about tonight. It's the most important thing I've ever been involved with. It's transformed my life, and I wanted to share that gift with others. The book says two things, basically. It says that a key part of the life journey is to rejoin soul and role, to bring our inner and outer lives together. A very hard thing to do in a culture that says don't wear your heart on your sleeve, play your cards close to your vest. And yet it's those very habits of dividedness that are causing so much pain in our society, so much crisis. The crisis in our institutions, I think, is not an ethical crisis as we normally understand it. The people who broke the rules all knew the rules. It's not going to be solved by teaching more courses on ethics or creating stiffer punishments for people who violate ethics. It's a crisis in human wholeness. They knew the rules, but they segmented them off from their words and their actions. They learned how to hold all of that in an airtight compartment that had nothing to do with how they were living their lives or doing their work. In these circles of trust, that gets challenged and people become whole. And while that's joyful, it's also challenging. It takes you to places in life where you have to stand up for who you are and what is fundamentally true, and you need community to support you in that. So the book also says that this rejoining of soul and role is not something we do all by our lonesomes. We need the company of other people to help us sort the wheat from the chaff. There are many voices within, at least there are in me, voices of falsehood as well as truth. And I need folks with whom to sit to help sort and sift that out. And we need the company of others to encourage us to cross over that threshold where we're living out of our own integrity. And taking consolation in that fact is also taking flack. And that's what happens in these groups. And it happens in some of the toughest professions in the world. And it's just a huge joy and privilege to be with people who care about this and support it as each of you does. Thank you so much for your support. And may the Red Sox win.
Now, Parker showed you the book. Hold it up again. And copies are not available for sale here. However, Parker has agreed to stay here for just another minute or two and help Barb and Bonnie hand out a special gift to the table hosts. So Barb and Bonnie, if you would join us up here.